So then be clear to us. Be clear with this. What will you do with inheritance tax? Who will you put it up for?
Well, look, the Alliance Party is not going to be part of whatever government we have in Westminster after the election with the best will in the world.
It's in your manifesto.
Yes, and the point we're making in our manifesto, we are giving an indication of the direction of travel as to how any Alliance MPs would
vote. I've warned you all before. When politicians say to me, direction of travel, my little fat ears prick up.
Well,
direction of travel means nothing.
It
means absolutely nothing.
With the best
you and I are both on the direction of travel right now to Barbados. We're never going to get there.
Well, both of us are sitting having a pleasant chat at the moment.
We are. So it's going to get a little bit unpleasant if you start telling me...
You take me to Barbados, by the way.
If you start telling me that inheritance tax isn't... isn't relevant or whatever it is you just said there, inheritance tax is in your manifesto.
Yes.
In your manifesto, you say that you will consider the use of taxes which tackle inequality, such as changes to inheritance tax.
And Stephen...
Tell us how you would change
Stephen,
it.
And Stephen, the same thing applies across the board.
How would you change inheritance tax?
As a party, we're not in a position to come here today and say what we're going to do in income tax, what we're going to do in capital gains tax.
Well, it's in your manifesto, then.
Because as a party, we do not have access to the Treasury, the full figures of what's going on in terms of public spending, tax income, what's happening in terms of the overall deficit level, in terms of the debt. The same thing applies in Northern Ireland in terms of the Department of Finance.
Stephen, but let's focus here.
Hold on. Let me focus slightly more, Stephen.
You're going to change inheritance tax in this country if you had any power whatsoever.
Yes.
Please tell people how you would change it.
All we can do, based upon the... Our access to information is to give you and give the people of Northern Ireland, give your listeners the direction of travel, your phrase that we don't let you like, but the values and principles that we bring to decisions and votes that any Alliance MP would take in Westminster.
Okay.
So we believe in progressive taxation. We are prepared to see more tax raised across the UK to pay for public services.
So who would you hit for inheritance tax?
Well, inheritance tax, the point we're making, it's not about hitting any particular sector.
Yes,
it's about changing the thresholds.
If it's not about hitting any particular sector, then it's not progressive.
If you bring the thresholds down, you'll capture more people in that regard.
It's about addressing
the point you're making, Stephen.
So you would bring the thresholds down?
Yes.
Would you?
Yes.
What are the thresholds currently?
Well, in some cases, it's close to £1 million.
And so how low would you bring it down to?
Well, we've been around in circles.
You don't know. Is that fair enough?
Well, I'm not in a position to give you the answer to that question.
Well, if it's not a case you don't know, why wouldn't you tell us?
Stephen, I'm not the Chancellor of the Exchequer. I'm not going to be the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
So you don't know.
I cannot sit in isolation, and with respect, Stephen, nor would any other politician, and give you an answer on that particular thing in isolation.
What is the point, Stephen? What is the point of these manifestos? And what is the point of a political party even bothering to publish them if actually they don't allow members of the public to look at them and actually, really, properly know how their lives are going to be affected before they put their vote into a political party? What on earth is the point? Direction of travel. A vote is worth more than that, is it not? So someone sits down and they say, okay, I want to decide whether it's Sinn Féin, DUP, UUP, SDLP, Alliance. I hope I haven't left anybody out. Others are included. But surely what they want is they want to know how your party's going to affect their lives.
Yes.
So for someone with inheritance tax, and they'll move on, and they think, okay, well, look, it's unfair if I've built up this money and I want to give it to my children and the money's been taken away and I've worked hard all my life. What you're currently saying to them is, well, we're saying we're going to change inheritance tax, but we haven't worked out how we're going to do it. We don't know how we're going to do it, but please vote for us anyway.
The point I'm making, Stephen, is we are treating the electorate with respect. We have given a 30-plus page manifesto, which is probably longer than several of the parties combined who are running against us in Northern Ireland. We are being open and honest with people in terms of what we want to do, in terms of the values, the principles, the approach that we will take to key decisions that may well be facing any Alliance MP in terms of the next Parliament. With the best will in the world, we cannot give you the full costings in terms of how we would run the UK state in terms of all the taxing and spending decisions that have to be taken based upon the advice of Treasury officials. But what we are saying is we want to see a reliance on progressive taxation, and it is better that we have a fair approach where we treat everyone the same in terms of thresholds around inheritance tax than to see a situation where we have what is in effect a lottery in terms of social care, where depending upon what actually happens to you in terms of your health condition, you may end up paying and losing what the nest egg you've built up, whereas the next house your neighbour doesn't.
So not only
because of their own situation, and that's not the whole culture that we've built up over the past 60 years in terms of the welfare state in the UK.
So not only are you going to bring water charges into Northern Ireland,
are not revenue raisers.
Not only are you going to put our rates up, but you're going to borrow more in Northern Ireland. So your manifesto says you propose changes in order to, quote, enable Northern Ireland to borrow similar proportions of money as Scotland and Wales without Treasury approval. So you think the Stormont executive, a new executive, first of all, would be competent enough to decide how much to borrow on behalf of Northern Ireland? And how much more would we borrow? So you're already putting some taxes up, and now you're borrowing more too.
Well, Stephen...
And then elsewhere in your manifesto, you say the Northern Ireland executive has not yet demonstrated the maturity to get additional tax-raising powers. So you don't think the executive has got enough maturity to decide tax-raising powers, but you do think the executive has got enough maturity to borrow on our behalf.
What a contradiction. Let's be very frank at the situation we find ourselves in. Devolution is the best form of government for Northern Ireland. It allows for local accountability, it allows for decisions to be taken that suits our particular circumstances. At present, particularly over the past 12 months, we have seen this situation become farcical. Opportunities have been missed, poor decisions taken. We've seen collapse in terms of proper accountability, and finally a collapse in terms of government. So people of Northern Ireland are being let down in that regard, and they do need good government. What we are talking about is getting in place competent, responsible, good governance. And that does, in due course, mean that we take on more responsibilities in terms of taxing and spending decisions, and also in terms of borrowing. And I've already given you a good example in terms of how we would treat, for example, Northern Ireland Water and give them stronger ability to actually...
How much would we borrow?
Well, again, that is part of what decisions...
How much more would we borrow?
That is a decision that we would take in the round based upon the wider financial situation.
So that's another that's another direction of travel.
Well, at this stage, Stephen, we have to face up to the fact that as things currently stand, the approach that we're taking to our public finances is not sustainable. It's cuts every year.
So have you got even a ballpark figure as to how much more we would need to borrow? Because this is in your manifesto.
Well, I mean, in realistic terms, you're probably talking low single figure, hundreds of millions, in terms of trying to shift what we would currently be able to borrow, in terms of bringing more money to the table.
So you envisage us borrowing what, 200-300-400 million, half a billion?
Well, you're probably talking in that particular range if you're talking about some additional borrowing ability for the executive. But the point I would stress in that regard is that any notion of additional borrowing does need to be linked to reform in terms of how we do things. If we're simply borrowing more money just to paper over the cracks, that's not credible, it's not sustainable. It has to be linked.
But you're saying in the manifesto, you're saying the executive has not yet demonstrated the maturity to get additional tax raising powers.
Yeah.
So you're saying it doesn't have the ability to
do it. We want additional tax rate.
But now you want to borrow.
Varying powers. But we have to have people in office who are mature. And that's the only way in which we're actually going to sort Northern Ireland out. Because we have to make some very radical changes in terms of our health system.
Let me make this point, Stephen.
If we don't actually invest, for example, in a different configuration around our health system, around our education system, we're not going to make the long-term savings in terms of revenue and spending decisions that will make them sustainable in the long run. That's the only way we're going to sort these problems out in the long run, unless we go through that type of process.
Let's move on to another alliance manifesto policy. You see, when I sit up at night and I'm reading all this in bed rather than watching Starsky and Hutch, another alliance manifesto policy is a regulatory system for the flying of flags on lampposts.
Mm-hmm.
Who would impose those regulations?
Well, those would be
the police, those would council
be,
workers.
Well, the regulations themselves would be imposed, determined by the assembly through changes. No,
who
changes,
would impose them?
Enforce them. Well, ultimately, this does become a matter for the police and the authorities to enforce. Now, you're going to ask me, on how on earth is that going to be realistic in terms of the situation and the reaction? And
correct.
What I would say to you in that regard is if we are saying that. Actually having a law in Northern Ireland that we can't enforce because of the fear of how certain small elements in communities are going to react, that is a major statement to the effect that the rule of law cannot apply in certain respects.
Many police officers are going to be needed to take a flag off a single lamppost in a contentious area. Are you going to bring in the riot squad to do this?
Well, the point, Stephen, here is that we have to, first of all, bear in mind that the erection of flags, for some, is part of their culture and may well be appropriate in some circumstances. But to others, comes across as being provocative. It comes across as the marking out of territory. It can be seen as intimidation. We see situations where local disputes come into effect, where people take into their own hands the removal of flags because the police and the authorities aren't there to actually protect them. That then, in turn, becomes a potential threat to wider public order. So if we don't actually have a formal response by the state to the situation, then we actually have the potential for greater problems to emerge.
Okay. So you said there that it would be acceptable in some circumstances for flags. In what circumstances?
Well, what we're talking about is a regulatory regime. So we're not talking about abolishing people having the ability to fly flags on public property. What we're talking about it must be controlled and regulated. So say, for example...
So what would the criteria be?
So say, let's say...
The headline criteria.
You would apply to do so, perhaps to your local council. So say, for example, you want to have a celebration around the 12th of July. So people could put flags up in lampposts on the routes of various parades. Maybe put them up a week before, a week after that particular event.
There's a recipe for fighting in the council, isn't there?
Well,
I can imagine. Can you imagine?
In the same way, on planning, a lot of decisions are actually delegated to officials who would take these decisions based upon criteria.
Right. So now, one of the most provocative things in Northern Ireland is being pushed on to the lowly paid officials.
Well, I would say, Stephen, that the balance would be in favour of the flags being flown, provided, of course, they are legal flags. Let me draw you a parallel. Obviously, at present, we have an election going on, and you see all these ruddy election posters up on lampposts.
It's different.
No, it's not different because there is a current regulatory regime around those.
There are. Those
are only allowed to go up during the election campaign, and political parties have 2 weeks after polling day to take them down.
So you don't
and
think...
after which then there's enforcement action. So political parties can get their heads around that type of approach, and some of them abuse the system and some are left up longer.
All right.
But that is the general approach that's taken.
So can I take from what you've just said that you don't think people in Northern Ireland, whatever way they see it being their country, be it the tricolour, the Union Jack, whatever, the Union flag, whatever, you don't think that they should have the ability to fly their flag all year round?
If they want to do it from their own personal private property, absolutely.
Would you need permission for that?
No.
Okay. On public, on lampposts?
Yes, but
should they be able to fly their flag all year round?
Well, the clue there is that's public property. It belongs to us all.
It does. So should they be able to fly a flag all year round?
So
you would ban the Union flag flying all year round from a lamppost on the Shankill?
Yeah.
Okay. And you would ask the police to go onto the Shankill, climb up lampposts and remove those flags. So it would be the police doing that, wouldn't it?
See, the undercurrent of
I'm not suggesting this is right or wrong. I'm seeking clarity.
The undercurrent of what you're saying, Stephen, is that the Shankill Road is somehow de facto a unionist Protestant area where it's okay to fly a flag. No, it's not actually. Every single street in Northern Ireland is shared space.
Stephen, get real.
Every single
street in Northern Ireland is not a shared space, is it?
Well, at present, it's not treated as such, but it must be regarded as being shared space. We cannot have a situation where we designate certain areas as de facto unionist or Protestant or Catholic or nationalist. Every single individual, irrespective of their background, should feel comfortable living in a particular area. So if you're in housing stress in Belfast and you happen to be from a Catholic nationalist background, anywhere should be somewhere where you can live, and it applies equally for someone from a Protestant unionist background.
Okay.
We have to get away from this notion of marking out territory.
Let's pull through this because there are a couple more policy issues I want to get to. Is your party proposing a train network to our airports?
Well, it is something where I think we do need to look for proper investment. Yes, I mean, public transport and linking up airports is part and parcel of what you see in most European and global cities.
There's
and
a train, of course, goes past the city airport, but you're actually talking about a major infrastructure project, are you? To create a train network from here to the international airport and a train network that stops the city airport?
We have...
Or just more buses? What is it?
Well, I mean, but certainly, I mean, it is illogical that you have a train halt at Sydenham that's effectively just short of a mile from the airport itself. And I'm sure we've all seen the weird situation of people wheeling cases along the Sydenham bypass.
And would you envisage this extra infrastructure in just one airport or both?
Well, we have two major airports alongside Derry City Airport as well.
So you would do it for both, would you?
Well, we need, my colleague David Ford has been long championing the notion that we need better public transport links to the international
airport.
Is
that a train network or just more buses?
We'll include a train network. And obviously, there's logistical issues in that the train line and the international airport are not necessarily aligned.
And you say
aligned.
You can predict some of my questions. You know exactly what I'm going to say. How much would that cost? Where are we getting that money from?
Well, I'm not...
In your manifesto, you say air connectivity, invest in better public transport links from our local airport.
Yeah.
You've confirmed now it's a major infrastructure project. It's a train project.
Well, I think in the case of the city airport, it is one that's more readily achievable. You're still talking.
You said you wouldn't differentiate between the two. You would give it to both.
Well, I mean, obviously the solutions would be different based upon the simple geographical facts that you're faced with in the situation.
Let's move on. You were Employment and Learning Minister up to last year.
Yeah.
Is a rise in university tuition fees on the way? Would you cap them? Would you keep them where they are? Would you try to reduce them to zero?
Well, the Alliance view is that we should maintain the fee levels where they are at present.
Where's that, 3,000?
It's just hit 4,000 for students now.
It's a lot more across the water, isn't it?
It's 9,000. Well, it's actually now beyond 9,000 in terms of England. Obviously, this comes at a challenge in terms of the executive where we have to make up the shortfall that our universities face in that regard.
Is it achievable given the financial constraints we currently have?
Well, we've costed this one.
Have you?
We have indeed.
Where's the trumpet?
Well, this actually reflects the point I was making, Stephen, because I was the Employment and Learning Minister, because I had access to the full facts and the civil service, we've actually managed to cost that particular aspect. Where we haven't had access to the full facts of the situation, our ability to cost is more restricted. So in order for us to fund a proper university system in Northern Ireland, we require an investment in the region of £85 million per year, and that involves addressing cuts that were made in recent years, addressing the structural gap that comes from the fact that we don't have the same fee levels, and for good reasons in Northern Ireland we haven't done that. And
so
also
it costs us £85 million a year to do what?
That allows us to address the cuts in the system, to address the funding gap between us and England in terms of our ability to invest.
So to keep
students,
the fees at £4,000.
And to allow us for some modest expansion in terms of places. So whenever investors are coming into Northern Ireland, they want a strong stream of quality graduates coming through our universities, as well as people coming through our further education colleges. So it's important that we invest in skills if we're serious about the economy.
Okay. Have you been fair to Arlene Foster? Has your party treated our former First Minister with integrity? This in the context of the Alliance Party supporting a motion at the Assembly in December that said Arlene Foster should be excluded from office for 6 months. And that motion that you supported said she had broken the Ministerial Code of Conduct. Where's the evidence that she broke it?
Okay. Well, let me walk through this in several regards. Maybe jumping ahead to your end point, no, this is not a red line in terms of the current negotiations. However, in a situation in which a scandal of that magnitude became so prominent in December, and indeed it was being looked at by the Public Accounts Committee previously, in a different jurisdiction, a minister themselves would be removed from office, or they would have stepped aside in terms of those investigations. But in terms of Northern Ireland,
there's been no conclusions from the PAC inquiry.
Indeed, there hasn't. But what I'm saying, if you look across the water, when you cover politics...
I'm looking at it here.
Yes, but the point I'm making here, Stephen, is that the standards we have in terms of accountability and democracy in Northern Ireland should be as high as what we see elsewhere in the UK. And in a similar situation where allegations are made, if you look, there have been ministers in England where serious allegations were made against them, where they stepped aside. And even then, they were subsequently cleared, but they still stepped aside during...
Stephen, I'm not asking about across the water. I'm asking about the ethics and the morality of your party here in Northern Ireland. In the context of this, I don't care about across the water. So you supported a motion which stated that Arlene Foster had broken the ministerial code of conduct. Where's your evidence?
Right. Well, there's two elements to this. One is the issue of the substance of what she did or didn't do whenever she was the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Investment, which has been addressed
through, evidence.
Through the public inquiry.
Not questions, evidence.
And coming to that, the evidence that we had was the blatant disregard for assembly accountability, engaging in an open and transparent way with the assembly around what was a major scandal that ultimately was a major factor in terms of the assembly actually
collapsing. How can you be more transparent to say you'll cooperate fully with the RHI inquiry?
But the point I'm making is whenever that motion was discussed in the assembly back on, I think it was the 19th of December,
there wasn't
even at that stage support for a public inquiry. Even Sinn Féin weren't supporting a public inquiry at that stage.
Okay.
We had complete obstinacy from the
Have you given me any concrete evidence yet that she's broken the ministerial code?
Yes, well, that very morning, she showed up and gave a statement to the Assembly purporting to come from the Executive Office that had not been signed off and approved by her colleague.
You backed the resolution before she stood up?
No.
Yes?
The resolution, the vote came after that particular statement was made.
Did
on
you
the
not
morning.
Table it?
No, the SDLP tabled the motion.
And you didn't sign it?
No.
Okay. Should she step aside now for the duration of the RHI inquiry?
Well, let me put it in this terms. I believe, and our party has maintained, that she should have voluntarily stepped aside. However, we are not making this a red line in terms of the negotiations.
Why have you changed your mind?
We haven't changed our mind on this. All along, we are very clear that the restoration of the executive...
You said a matter of a moment ago it's normal for ministers to step aside while there are allegations. What's changed?
The point we're making is that we think she should herself step aside and realise the magnitude of the crisis that was facing us back in December and through to January and done that herself. However, our focus was not on personalities, it was on the processes and the policies of the executive. That's the approach we're taking in terms of the executive formation. So we're not making Arlene Foster the key issue in this regard.
In December.
No, we said she should step aside, and we had that ability to potentially, if that motion had taken place, for her to be forced to step aside.
Why should she not be stepping aside now then? What's changed?
Well, at this stage, because the stakes for Northern Ireland are incredibly high.
They were in December.
Yes. And if she had stepped aside or been forced to step aside by the Assembly and someone else put in place, the Assembly would still have been in place and things would have rolled on.
Here's the bottom
line, would have
Stephen.
Proper accountability. The bottom line now, Stephen, is that we have had the collapse of our institutions. We do not have a functioning government in Northern Ireland. For the first time in 96 years of the Northern Ireland state, we have a health services crumbling education system that's in desperate need of investment of money. We're uncertain of our ability for police on the streets. We have to get this sorted out over the next few weeks.
So now it's okay.
It's not okay. What we're saying, this is now bigger than the particular personalities. Are we simply going to have...
So you made a mistake in December.
No, it's a different context, Stephen.
Yes, but here's...
It's a different context.
But I guess here's the bigger importance behind my question. You see, maybe the learning for this for parties like yourselves is that you don't insist on someone stepping aside from their political position, and you don't be judge and jury until there is a concrete conclusion. And you supported a motion to take her out
before
the inquiry completed, before there was an absolute
and concrete if you go back and read the
Hansard. And was that healthy for Northern Ireland?
If you go back and read the Hansard from that time, we were very clear that we were having an open mind in terms of what she did or didn't do. But we were clearly saying that those issues of public confidence and accountability, where she should have voluntarily stepped aside, and were clearly she was in defiance of the will of the people in that particular regard. These were incredibly serious situations. And the standards that we see elsewhere in the UK and indeed in Northern Ireland, where her predecessor Peter Robinson stepped aside in 2010.
Just to be clear, I'm being told that the team is looking at an Irish news report which says that your party did sign that SDLP motion 2 days before Arlene Foster stood up.
Well, if that's the case, I correct my.
If that's the case, it completely
it doesn't.
It completely trashes the thrust of your whole argument.
It does not completely. It doesn't trash that particular point. Let me put it in this particular context, Stephen. That was one example of a whole range of a situation where she was utterly defying what was the popular will.
Will?
Yes, people across Northern Ireland were incredibly frustrated.
The biggest party in Northern Ireland.
Yes, people were hugely frustrated at a situation where money was being squandered in terms of the renewable heat incentive, where we had major crises in terms of our health and education systems, and ultimately the Assembly collapsed through the fact that we had a complete standoff in this regard.
All right, we've got 30 seconds. Why should people vote for your party?
Well, it's about changing direction in terms of our politics. We have to change direction in terms of our ability to have a functioning assembly, and we have to change direction in terms of Brexit. We have to avoid a hard Brexit. We've got to get that special deal for Northern Ireland and have that second referendum. These are the biggest challenges we've been facing in 20 plus years, if not longer. We've got to get this right.
I always enjoy you coming in, Stephen.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.